ordinance 24-05, chapter 99.
Just, I don't know if you want to wait a second, Mr. Wheeler, or...
Yeah, just hang on. Let the applicant make his way to the front here.
I'm not the applicant, I'm gonna sit in the front row.
Well, yeah, testifiers.
Saving steps.
Yeah, testifiers.
All right, Mr. Wheeler, that's...
I think we're safe.
So, I was asked just to give, Mr. Whitehouse's, well, which one's first on the agenda? 99, so that's me. Tell you what, let me come down there, just so I can get to the podium. Give me one second. Grab my stuff.
I can tee it up way more.
Yeah, if you could do that.
So this is an ordinance to amend chapter 99, article, make sure it's the right ordinance, article 2, sections 99.9, public hearing on preliminary plat approval or disapproval of the Code of Sussex County regarding the design criteria for all subdivisions and submitted into the record, Mr. Chairman. We have a copy of the ordinance as it was introduced to County Council on October 15th of this year, and we have 5 written comments that are included in your paperless packet. And I will yield to Mr. Robertson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Whitehouse. So a little bit of background on this, how we got to this point, just as a reminder for you all in the audience and anybody watching online. You know, we've talked a lot about comp plans tonight. This initiative came out of the prior comp plans, but also the most recent one. And this was something, because I know there's a question, why now, you know, the end of the year with the election, et cetera. But the current county council adopted the current comp plan. And then, you know, there was discussion about the implementation of that comp plan. And, you know, going back through, there was presentations to this county council about development design ideas. And, you know, there were multiple ones that were talked about. There were 5 broad categories. This goes back to March of 2023 to discuss open space, superior design, subdivision standards, forest preservation, and site work. And those were ultimately sort of boiled down, and you remember we talked about those at a joint workshop with the commission and with county council that was actually September, a little more than a year ago. And that ultimately was sort of modified to include the perimeter buffer work we did and the subdivision standards, you know, that essentially is the 99.9C stuff. So that was something that council felt strongly about. We knocked out resource buffers. We took care of the perimeter buffers. Council said, well, these are the next 2 in line. And because this was this council's initiative, they gave us the instructions to work on it during this council year. So that I wanted to give that background, because I know a lot of people would say, well, you know, why are we doing it this time? That's the reason why this council felt strongly about trying to tackle this, since they were the one that started it. You know, so we'll see where that gets us. But with that, the first one on the agenda is the 99.9C revisions. If you recall, you know, this is one that's been in there. There's 17 criteria currently, but they're considerations. And one of the things that's been talked about over the years is, what's that mean to consider it? You know, we sometimes get very good and very explanatory responses to those 17 items. Sometimes we see, you know, a response that says, we will consider this, you know, and okay, well, what's that mean? Did you check the box? And so there's been talk for some time about changing those considerations, clarifying them, and making them requirements, that you have to satisfy these items, not just consider them. Because again, what does consider mean? You know, you could argue that till you're blue in the face. So with that, what's been done is not rewrite chapter 99, like not throw it away and start over. It's to modify it. And I'm just going to run through these, if I can, without jumping too far ahead, quickly. So previously said, you know, the approval of a subdivision shall include consideration of the following. Now it says an applicant for approval of a preliminary plat shall provide that the following criteria are satisfied and the manner in which each one is satisfied through the design of the preliminary plat. So that puts the burden on an applicant to make its record that it has satisfied these criteria. I mean, that's what that means. So running through them, the first one always said integration of the proposed subdivision into the existing terrain and surrounding landscape. We've just changed that, that you have to show that the proposed subdivision is integrated into the existing terrain and surrounding landscape. So that one's the same, it's just now a requirement. The second one said minimal use of wetlands and floodplains. That kind of is out the door because we have a resource buffer requirement. So we just took that and said, essentially got to comply with the resource buffer requirements. The next one was preservation of natural and historical features. We added to this one, and this follows some of the work that came out of the perimeter buffer conversations, that natural and historic features are preserved and forest fragmentation is minimized. And this is the new part. In addition, a forest assessment shall be conducted with a forest assessment report, including with the preliminary plat. If woodlands or mature forests that contain high habitat value are found, these areas shall be conserved to the maximum extent possible. And we use those terms, forest assessment and the forest assessment report, because they're in code already with the perimeter buffer. The next one we just made, the preservation of open space and scenic views, just the affirmative that it's a requirement. Same thing with the minimization of tree vegetation and soil removal. We reworded that, so it's a requirement. Same thing with screening of objectionable features from neighboring properties and roadways. It's the same language, just says that objectionable features are screened from neighboring properties and roadways. Water supply, that's already there, that the supply of potable water to future residents for the proposed subdivision is safe and adequate for their use. Again, there's a question about that in the record. You know, that's something that, like the willing and able to serve letter. I mean, that's essentially already there. That's not changing it. You know, people are already complying with that because they're providing something from Tidewater, et cetera. Provision for safe sewage disposal. Just that the means and methods of sewage disposal are adequately addressed for the proposed subdivision. That's going to, again, be one of the private providers, DENREC approval, or county sewer. The next one was a long one, and it's kind of been split up. It has to do with the minimization of erosion and sedimentation. We just pared that down to say that erosion and sedimentation is minimized, and the methods and minimizations are adequately identified. How are you going to do it? You know, just tell us how you're going to do it. The next one we hear about, but we don't necessarily have in 999C, so this is a new one. It has to do with groundwater levels, that changes to the groundwater levels will be minimized, and that groundwater recharge is maximized as a result of the proposed subdivision, and that the methods of both are adequately identified. That part is currently in code. You know, it's worded a little bit differently, but that's in code. The new part is, in addition, that there will not be increased rates of runoff or increased risk of flooding onto adjoining properties from the design and construction of the proposed subdivision, and the methods used to achieve those criteria are adequately identified. To me, that's a benefit to the applicant, to the public, and to you all, because we hear that all the time. You know, how is this development going to increase runoff onto my property? So this just makes that part of the presentation, part of the record that has to be made in the public hearing that will answer those questions affirmatively. Already in their effect on area property values, we just flip the words around to say that that area property values will not be adversely affected. Preservation and conservation of farmlands in there, we've worded that a little bit different, that any active farmland adjacent to the proposed subdivision is adequately preserved through the design and construction of the proposed subdivision. In many cases, we have the ag preservation you know, separation requirements if there's active farmland in addition, but at least, you know, check that box that you've shown how you're doing that. One that's in there now is effect on schools, public buildings, and community facilities. We've taken that out and changed it to say that the applicant has consulted with the local school district where the proposed subdivision will be located, period. So right now, we send out letters to the local school districts whenever there's a land use application. Interestingly, Mr. Whitehouse, we don't often get responses back. You know, so that's happening from us. You know, this just puts that on the front end. And that way, hopefully, if it works right, you know, we'll know about whether school bus stops needed, you know, on the front end, that sort of thing. And there'll be design issues taken into account with a subdivision design. Maybe not, maybe they don't respond, but at least there'll be the initiative to reach out to them first. And then the next one is, and this comes from our MOU with DLDOT. Previously it said the effect on area roadways and public transportation has to be considered. We've changed that to say that the subdivision is either within an established transportation improvement district or the subdivision endeavors to maintain the current DLDOT level of service on all adjacent roads and intersections after the subdivision is completed and in no event will allow the level of service to degrade below a level of service D. That's language that's in our MOU with Sussex County and DelDOT now. So that just takes what's in the MOU and codifies it into here. You got to show that it's compatible with area land uses. There will not be an adverse effect on area waterways, which again is already rolled into the resource buffer. And then the one we just heard a lot about, that there will be safe and efficient vehicular and pedestrian movement within the site and to and from adjacent developed properties. That's already in there. We added the phrase with interconnectivity. So, topical. I didn't know that we'd be hearing this ordinance at the same time we just had that hearing a moment ago. But that's the changes to 99.9C. It's not a wholesale rewrite of it. It's really just, the folks behind me might differ. They probably will. But it's flipping it from considering it to making these requirements that you have to address them. Show us how you're dealing with these versus just we'll consider it. Or we did consider it,
Help eliminate questions later.
That's all I have, unless there's any questions at this point.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
And I would just say, too, for staff, if we could just incorporate that explanation I made at the beginning into both hearings, because that applies to both of them, just for the minutes. That's all.
If you'll take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anyone here with an interest.
Can I go sit in the back?
Okay. This is not necessarily for or against, but I assume everyone here would like to have the opportunity to speak. If there is someone that is particularly in favor, we'll start with that person, but typically you folks just want to make comments because you have an interest in what's going on. So who would like to go first? Really? I have to pick somebody?
Come on.
Somebody to be first, right?
There you go.
Of course, I didn't print this big enough, so I have to wear my glasses while doing this. Well,
I do need you to state your name for the record.
Of course. I was going to say good afternoon, but obviously it's no longer good pre-evening, but we're at good evening. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, staff, and members of the audience, my name is Ring Lardner, a professional engineer and principal at the firm Davis Bowen Ferdell, 1 Park Avenue, Milford, Delaware, 19963. As this body is well aware, our firm has represented numerous applications before you, including myself. In addition, our firm represents other municipalities, including myself, and we review regulations, codes from both perspectives, so it kind of gives us a unique look into things. With Mr. Robertson's explanation, I understand now the why we're here. The part I'm trying to figure out is what problem we're trying to solve. Are we really solving the problem? Is there a second, third, fourth, or effects of any code revision changes? And going through this, as a reminder, now Chapter 99C becomes a requirement of satisfaction. Satisfaction is defined Webster's dictionary, but other members may say we did or did not satisfy, so that adds its own little construct, but I understand the purpose of it. And we typically do a pretty good job with a written response to the 99C and addressing that. But as a reminder to the audience and to the staff, this provision now applies, it always has, to subdivision with 5 or more lots. This isn't just your 500-lot subdivision, 100-lot subdivision, 5 lots or more, or any other previous subdivision that's met the maximum number of minor subdivisions that then gets categorized as a major subdivision, has to now comply with all these different requirements. And that's regardless of that subdivision being business or commercial. And the subdivision doesn't really distinguish between a residential subdivision and a commercial subdivision, although not particularly 99-C, but definitely when we get to open space, actually does come into some discussion as far as open space goes. So having said that, kind of wanted to go through different lines on the screen, starting with lines 55 through 57. Mr. Roberts explained that the wetland's been addressed through the buffer management plan and the drainage assessment report, but it still says floodplains to be minimally impacted by the code, by the development, and the county code does not prohibit construction within the floodplains. A landowner could develop their property per Article 18 of Chapter 115. They could either file a map revision, which removes the parcel completely out of the floodplains. You can fill a map with fill to, remove just a portion of the house out of the floodplain, Or you can develop your property and provide the freeboard requirement for your house to be within a floodplain. So the county code does prevent that. To say minimally, that becomes a subjectiveness, and I know part of this was to remove some of the subjectiveness to add the predictability of what we're trying to do. So my first reaction was to say, just remove it, but that has its own issues because that's not really a fair way to say this. And I always try to come to the meetings with a solution to one. I have one, but I don't have one, to be fair. And what I mean by that is not all floodplains are the same. You have special flood hazard areas, more commonly known as the base flood, 100-year flood. That'd be your zone X's, shaded, your zone A's, AE's, VE's, I can name all of them. They all have different requirements. Some things you can develop in, some things you can't. So maybe look at that. You have your moderate flood hazard areas, minimal flood hazard areas. And I think this may be more appropriate to better address in Article 18. Maybe we don't have time for that with what the current council wants to do. Maybe revisit Article 18 or Chapter 115 of how to deal with that. And then that becomes a requirement for this condition, is that you've met the requirements of the floodplain district because you have a district in the county code. So why duplicate matters is my opinion. Getting in lines 55 through 63, this gets into force assessment. I don't disagree that it's stated in the code, but there really is no defined force assessment. I know recently we've all been kind of using the Newcastle County force assessment, but Maryland has its own. So again, not one we're gonna resolve tonight, but it's one I think, okay, what is that assessment? Is it an arborist can do it, a registered landscape architect can do it? Can I do it saying, hey, that forest looks pretty good, or that forest doesn't look all that great? Like, what is that kind of standard? It kind of helps, again, get to predictability that allows the staff to review things, and I'll kind of come back to that one in a minute. Line 72 to 74 talks about objectionable features. At this point, I believe with the new buffer ordinance, as all subdivisions are required to have a perimeter buffer, that includes roadway frontages. What screenable objects are there anymore when you've screened four sides of your property? But again, complying with the buffer ordinance, we may comply with that code, so it may just be semantics. Lines 85 through 89 is where I was beginning to struggle. That deals with erosion and sediment control practices. For the longest time, we would say we would comply with the sediment stormwater regulations, but now we're being asked to identify things with a plan. So do we have to now start to do ENS plans for this, because you have silt fence, you have sediment traps, you have other protections? What is that thing that we're supposed to show to demonstrate compliance? And like I said, it's always been at the end of the day, a project cannot get approved without approval of DENREC and or their delegated agency to approve ENS plans. Lines 91 through 96 talk about recharge and stormwater. Recharge is just one of the numerous tools in the toolbox allowed in the regulations. So recharge was a big push by DENREC. They realized they couldn't do it for groundwater. So again, I just want to be careful with promoting the recharge. It sometimes works, doesn't work, but there's one of 48 tools in the toolbox that's allowed in the ENS regulations. But the one I wanted to get clarification on or to bring to everyone's attention is that, without getting overly technical tonight, because I know it's been a long day, the erosion is the sediment storm regulations does allow for an increase in runoff on the adjacent properties. You're allowed to do that through what's called no adverse impact to properties. And by definition, you can't increase the water surface elevation by more than 0.05 feet. If it's the county's intent to have that higher standard, that's fine. But the question is the engineering department prepared to review all stormwater designs? Because SCD and DENREC cannot review the higher standard.
Sir. I want to ask you a plain English question because I'll make sure my understanding is. Isn't what the law say that you can't run any more water off on your neighbor than it's already running
onto
your neighbor?
You're allowed to. With this regulation, you're allowed to. You're allowed to have a 10% increase, and as long as you demonstrate no adverse impact, we can actually increase runoff on adjacent land.
Okay. And what you're saying is that what's being proposed appears to be something more stringent than
yes,
that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's okay.
Because that was the easier way to explain
to
it. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. So I've took care of that. Good lines 108, 110 dealt with the school district. I think you've already addressed that. As long as we have some contact with the school district, because they typically don't talk to us, kind of like they didn't talk to The county advertised like they don't talk during or plus, so just want to make sure that was not an overly strenuous requirement for us, because you know how that is, Mr. Roberts. So we say, we provide your bus stops. We'll coordinate with you later on. So again, this gets into, I'm trying to think, when we present, opposition presents, we're not in this spat. So just trying to get to a solidified way of we've satisfied that requirement.
Yeah, and I would think on that one, it's just, you know, confirmation that you've done it, you know, that there's a letter that has gone to the school district that says, you know, we're doing this project. Here's, you know, a link to the site plan. Please let us know if you have any comments or want to speak further on it. One of the things we are conscious of with that was, you know, just how far it should go or not go, you know, with that requirement.
So, right. Yeah. Fair enough. Thank you. The lines 115 through 120 dealt with DLDOT. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding what's stated there is that we can't make roads worse than level D. What if a road's already worse than level D? What is that requirement? Because I didn't see that in the code, because I could think of Kings Highway, for example, where we're doing interim improvements that makes it level service F plus plus, level service F plus, because there's too much background traffic. There's too much onerous for that developer to handle that. So if it's a matter of you're not degrading below a D or you're not making it worse, and that's fine. I'm not sure if that's really clear in there, if that was the intent. Just want to kind of make sure, Mr. Robson, that we're not creating something more onerous than what the intent is. Because at the end of the day, we give all the control to DLDOT at that point in time. And then they tell us what you don't do. Do the county kind of lose some of that control by thoroughly, completely deferring to them for that?
I'll go back and I'll look at what that MOU says as well, because I think it talks about that in there. And I just don't want to misquote it.
Neither do I. Yeah. We're talking about quotes and quotes again, and I feel like it'd be in the third quote tonight. Mr. Robs already brought up the interconnectivity. You know, it's been mentioned it's occurred. Is that now a requirement? Because it's now as part of 99-9C, and then we just know we went through for the past 2.5 hours or so.
Yeah, you know, the thing with that is that, I mean, honestly, we didn't talk about it because Mr. Hutt brought it up. The motion we had on Schofield actually cited there's another provision of code that talks about interconnectivity. You know, so there's an element of having this in here is just a firebrand, whether we need to have it or not in, you know, in 19, because it's already in 99-17.
Somewhere, and it's the ongoing debate of private roads and who pays for extra traffic, and that's an ongoing debate that's above and beyond us here, but just wanted to...
Yeah, I mean, it's already, this doesn't add anything, because it's already in there. I mean, it says for subdivision you're supposed to do it, but whatever, yeah.
And two last quick points is I didn't notice a grandfathering clause in this. I just said it's adopted upon orders. Doesn't talk about previously submitted applications 6 months afterwards, because obviously there's many applications being worked on today. That doesn't mean, again, that's going to apply also to 90. When we get in open space, I didn't see that in there as well. Too.
No,
we have
well,
some
so
type of grandfathering clause, but no, just
the way
to bring
it's drafted
up, so.
Or introduced, now this doesn't mean it could be changed, is that it would be effective when it's adopted by county council. But, you know, if there's a recommendation that there be, you know, a delayed implementation like we've done on others, I think, you know.
I think anything, obviously, that's been in the queue is in the queue. It's kind of hard to go back, and you could, you know, if you submitted, I think what we've used before is any type of action, whether it was a plus application, preliminary conference, Mr. Robertson, you know what I'm talking about. I think we did it for.
Yeah, no, there's standard language for that. I mean, so just so we're on the record, that's your request that
yes,
it be.
Sir.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, the commission will consider that. I mean, that would be consistent with how it's been done before, too. Not for everything, but for
understand. Again, understand we're trying to get to the applicant has to satisfy, staff has to be able to verify we've satisfied, this body has to be able to say that we satisfy. Many different groups that come out to either for or against, did we satisfy? So as we try to remove some of the subjectiveness, helps make it easier for everybody going through it. I agree, the 99C has been subjective for a while. We're trying to clean up a little bit. Just as we get better, may not be able to achieve it now. We have to come back and revisit again, but just my thoughts and some things to help clarify things and make it a little less objective. And thank you for your time, and can answer any questions you have of me.
Okay. I got a question.
Any questions for
Ray?
Yeah.
I agree with line 59. Going back to what determines a mature forest, or savable land, the biggest tree is always not the best tree. I think that should be done by a credential forester. Maybe not. They're very hard to find, so they're not readily available. So I'm asking a question, what you think. So you would go by basal count to remove some trees for the best growth for the longevity of the buffer. What do you think?
So I think the appropriate people are your registered landscape architects, they've gone to school for it, your certified arborist, your foresters.
Landscapers aren't foresters.
I know, but resident landscape architects, they design buffers, and so that they still have the same species identification.
Right,
they'll know invasive species from that standpoint. They'll know if a tree is dying or not. They're certified in doing that. I believe some of your wetland scientists are probably qualified. I know, like Will Trupak does a bunch of the forests you've seen lately. I know Ed Linnae, Tom Noble have done work in Maryland, but not here in Delaware. Some others, I think, Mr. Roberts, we kind of look at language that Newcastle County has, I think, who could do theirs. But I know that's kind of become the de facto standard here in Sussex County. I don't know what King County uses. I know they require tree counts of how they determine forest areas, but they have a forest preservation component, whereas here we're talking about wood forests or saves. We're kind of adding an ad hoc preservation without having it in there, but just that's my thought of who would be able to do some type of assessment that would provide validity to the assessment.
I guess I'm just looking to save the smaller trees so this thing can continue to grow over and over for years to come and keep the maintenance down.
Understood.
That's what I was thinking. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, sir. We thank you. Okay, who's next?
Good evening, members of the commission and staff. My name is John Horner. I'm here on behalf of the Home Builders Association of Delaware. I live at 22261 Waterview Road in Lewis, Delaware. The Home Builders Association supports efforts to clarify and create objective criteria with respect to ordinance to 999C. The current ordinance is vague, as I think everybody understands, and that vagueness was somewhat defensible before the criteria became it had to be satisfied. When you had just the consideration aspect, vagueness was somewhat okay. Now, when you have standards that have to be satisfied, it creates the need for objective criteria, and vagueness will create more issues. It will lead to different interpretations. It leads to an inability to design plans to comply with code. It will lead to enhanced scrutiny as people disagree with interpretations, whereas objective criteria remove that from the permitting environment. The goal of any zoning ordinance should be to set objective review standards so that land use applications have a clear understanding of how they should design a project. In fact, if a zoning ordinance is not clear, it can actually be unconstitutional under the void for vagueness doctrine. The Supreme Court has said that a statute that is so vague that a man of common intelligence must necessarily guess at its meaning and differ as to its application violates due process of law. I plan to go through some of the items here, but I think there's several things in this code that if I were to ask or if you were to speak amongst yourself, which is whether or not it's permissible or not, as to how you interpret things, they're incredibly vague. And they're vague to the point where you ask somebody to design a plan that complies with this, and I think you're going to get a lot of different interpretations as to what that would be. For example, the section that talks about preservation of mature forests that contain high habitat value to the maximum extent possible. What is that maximum extent? If you have an entirely wooded parcel, are you saying that the entire parcel needs to be preserved so that development is not possible at all? Or are you saying that maximum extent possible involves you being able to achieve your permitted density and preserving all forests outside of your permitted density? Or is it somewhere in the middle? Are you saying, well, you can get 50% of your permitted density, but you need to keep 50% of the mature forest? How do I, as an attorney advising my clients, advise them what to do with a piece of land after they're going to spend significant money getting to the preliminary plan process and a year to get to a hearing? What is that barometer? How do we tell an engineer to design to that? You know, if it's the first option of, hey, well, there's all mature trees in the site, they need to all be preserved, I'd argue that's inconsistent with section 115 of the zoning code that says mature forest should not render a parcel undevelopable. Similarly, you have language about open space exceeding views, which is a holdover from the existing code. What is a scenic view? What are open spaces that are necessary for preservation? You take that same scenario with a mature forested piece, and let's say you have an entirely open field. If I have to preserve open space, do I have to preserve that entire field? Do I have to preserve 20% of it, 50% of it, 75% of it? We have open space requirements in the code that say this is the amount of open space that you need. Those are the types of objective standards that say this is the percentage of open space that needs to be preserved. Those are the objective standards that should be adhered to rather than subjective criteria and standards where compliance cannot be readily measured and people cannot plan and design in accordance with. Similarly, screening of objectionable materials. We have a buffer code. The buffers are on four sides of the property, as Mr. Lardner spoke about. Instead, I would argue that that section should say that the buffer ordinance is complied with. If that's not the right standard, then what am I telling my engineer to design to? Am I saying, well, you got the buffer, but this might be objectionable, or this might be, or might not, so maybe double the buffer here, or put a fence here? The answer is, we don't know, and nobody knows, and it's up for interpretation. And when there's vagueness and interpretation issues, that's where problems lie. And again, my goal is not to parse through. I think if you go through a lot of these sections and you ask yourself, what does this mean, and how do you design to this, you'll find yourself asking many of the same questions that I am. And I think where there are analogs in code or in state regulations, those should be, you should use those. The same way you use, I thought they did a great job with saying for the buffer ordinance for resource protection. Rather than saying you will screen from buffers and wetlands, it says you'll follow that ordinance. When they say objectionable features, it shouldn't say you'll screen from them, it should say you'll follow, you will show compliance with the buffer ordinance. With sediment stormwater management, it should say you will comply with the Delaware state regulations related to that. Again, Mr. Lardner identified the issue that Sussex County, in this, the requirement is more onerous and require review of the sediment and stormwater management plans by the county to ensure compliance, which isn't happening right now because that's done by SCD. So, in short, it's very important that we have that subjective criteria. It's important for applicants and landowners so they can rely on their zoning, so they can get in front of you with plans that they know have a likelihood of approval. And frankly, it's important for you as an approving body, because if you don't have this, every single decision that you make will be scrutinized to the nth degree, more so than it already is, because now you are mandating compliance with these things, and you're mandating compliance with things that are objective criteria that reasonable people can disagree with. And if reasonable people can disagree, what the courts have said is tie goes to the landowner. Thank you. If anybody has any questions.
Okay. Yes, sir. Mr. Barrasso, come on up.
Well, Mr. Barrasso's coming up. Just one point I was looking at, too, because we talked about who could do the forest assessment and forest assessment report. That's already a defined term for what it's worth. That's already in our code, and it's prepared and certified by a licensed landscape architect, certified arborist, or licensed forester, or a forester designated by the Society of American Foresters as a certified forester. So there's some language that's in there already. So, yeah, just to clarify that, that's all. Thanks.
Good evening. Rich Barrasso, representing Sussex Preservation Coalition, along with Steve Sinclair. We're going to kind of duo this. Otherwise, neither of us will be able to survive the evening. So again, Mr. Chairman, good evening, Commission and staff. We've spoken in the past with regards to the efforts of SPC, Sussex Preservation Coalition, where we have a design development team that works on primarily land use issues. So the work that was done regarding perimeter buffers is the same team that worked with regards to advance that. So in terms of the content of what we're going to be presenting, we're going to make recommendations on Ordinance 2405, Chapter 99, 9C, as well as open space. What you're going to see in terms of the format is that it's a three-column chart. In the first column will be the county proposed amendments as written in the draft. We've identified what we believe are potentially limitations. It is that the proposed change potentially is limiting the county's ability to clearly define the intent and or the ability to ensure compliance. And then the recommendation itself, I have to preface it by saying that there's no attorney amongst us in our group. We do have some people with planning experience. Some of our recommendations lack legal jargon, but I hope that you understand in terms of what the content or the context of what we're recommending. I'm going to cover three of our recommendations. First and foremost, I thought it was a huge step forward in transitioning from satisfied from considering dissatisfied. Huge step. I think that it could have gone a little bit further to require demonstration up to and including adherence to standards, which Mr. Horner had spoke of. And those standards, whether they be from the county or from the state or from the federal government. So our recommendation in terms of C would be to add in terms of applicant for approval of a preliminary plat shall demonstrate how the following criteria is compliant with all applicable Sussex County ordinances and any applicable federal and state statutes. We think that language would be helpful there. In provision number one, we think the word integration can be subject to different interpretations. How well the development makes use of the natural and or forest meadows. So again, I think demonstration in addition to the fact that the criteria needs to be satisfied has to be clear with each of these provisions. So our recommendation is on number one is that the proposed subdivision is consistent with the comprehensive plan, land use map, and the Office of State Planning investment level guidance. There's nowhere in 99C that speaks to the comprehensive plan or the Office of State Planning investment levels. And we know that the work coming out of the Office of State Planning is guidance. We know that that's not a requirement that you are to follow. But it would be very reassuring that 99C ties into what the comprehensive plan has to say, especially the land use map, because that's the really only law that comes out of the comprehensive plan. So we think including comprehensive plan and guidance from the state would be important in 99C1. In terms of the second provision, minimal use of wetlands and floodplains, you know, again, back to Mr. Horner's comment, where he used the term maximized, the word minimal in the proposed language, minimally is defined in the dictionary as extremely small or negligible. So if that's what you mean relative to disturbance, especially as it relates to building in the floodplain, if what you're saying it should be minimal there, do we have any type of measurement in terms of what minimal is acceptable? Delaware, lowest state in the nation, ranked number three in terms of new homes being built in the floodplain. Number three, Sussex County is number three in the nation relative to new homes being built in floodplain. So as you look down the road in terms of climate change, does the ordinance speak to what you want to manage relative to development in floodplain areas? At this point, I'm going to have Steve take a look at the next several provisions.
For the record, Steve Sinclair. I live at 30726 Beach Club Court in Millsboro. I'm a licensed forester, former director of forests for the state of Vermont, hence wearing a plaid shirt versus a suit. So I'm going to take us through a few more of the criteria. The first one we're going to look at is number three, which as proposed, this criteria covers a lot. It talked about natural and historic features as well as tree preservation. And we recommend putting tree preservation under a separate criteria, under criteria five, which deals with vegetation. Why kind of combine a bunch of different things into one when you already have a criteria five that deals with vegetation? So we're recommending putting some of those statements down in criteria five and have this one, D, deals strictly with with cultural, historic, and scenic features, because they're all part of this cultural landscape. And that really is what makes Sussex County so unique, is that cultural landscape, which is a combination of farmland and forests, farmsteads, and quaint villages, and of course our tidal areas. So our feeling is that criteria three should address natural, or should address, excuse me, cultural and historic features and scenic resources. And we recommend, based on, well, what is a scenic resource, we recommend that a visual impact assessment be performed to ensure that scenic views and cultural landscape is maintained. And you will look at the back of our presentation. We have a series of definitions, and a visual impact assessment is defined in that. The next criteria deals with open space, we're suggesting that the proposed language is really not actionable or well defined, and we recommend having open space identified here with identification and methods for preservation that demonstrates minimal impact on the ecological and recreational values. And this all should be shown in the plot plan. And when we talk about the open space ordinance next, you'll be able to see where that makes sense. Okay, we had talked about taking forest fragmentation out of forest preservation, out of criteria three, and put it into five. And to us, that makes a lot more sense. As stated earlier, this vegetation and forest under one criteria here at five. And we've attempted to better define the values that need to be identified and described in the forest assessment report. So somebody said, well, what's a forest assessment report? What is that supposed to pertain to? And if you look at our language, we talk about what that forest assessment report would include, all the vegetation. And so it would look at natural features, wildlife habitat, floodplain forests, and so on. And we also recommend placing a limit on the amount of disturbance of existing vegetation, including forests, to less than 50% of the existing resource. And this would include impacts from the design of the development and stormwater assistance. As an aside, I would like to acknowledge that the county's work in forest assessments here, and building upon this great work previously accomplished on changes in the perimeter buffer ordinance. Doing this on this assessment now, a vegetation assessment for the whole property prior to development, is an excellent step in protecting the important natural resources. And then under six, as written, this criteria is not actionable or well-defined as well. So we propose a requirement of a detailed screening plan, not only of perimeter buffers, because that's not the only thing that needs to be screened in these developments. What about parking lots? What about public infrastructures within the development itself that a house could be adjacent to? We need to be looking at screening more than just around the perimeter of the development, but within it as well. And this is an opportunity to require a screening plan, detailed screening plan, be developed that would screen some of those infrastructures within the community, parking lots, lighting, things of those sorts. We are not recommending any changes until we get to criteria 10. And in criteria 10, as proposed, there's really no standard for the word minimization. And we propose that these be fully identified, including method and means to retain vegetation and limit soil disturbance and bulk grading to only those areas necessary for improved infrastructure. All too often what's happening now is the areas that are not going to get developed still get all sorts of equipment traveling around them, compacting soil, removing vegetation, and then they may turn into open space or whatever, and a lot of those functions have been destroyed as a result of that. So here's an opportunity under this criteria to take care of that. Under number 11, once again, the standards are no standards for prescribed for minimum or maximum, and we propose the use of green technology and BMPs that would be fully identified in the preliminary plot plan. And those would come from the Sussex Conservation Service or from the state. Number 12, our recommended changes attempt to rectify the lack of any sourced appraisal analysis by requiring a real estate market analysis on impacts to similar developments. This becomes critical as more and more developments come into being and what impacts they would have on previous investments. And then finally, under 13, our changes also recognize not only the value of preservation and conservation of farmland, but also should consider forest land as well, because that is part of Sussex County landscape. And as an example of an impact of a new development could have on forest land, you could have a development with a forest behind it that's literally landlocked and would have no access for active forest management because all the road frontage is taken up by the development, and then you have this forested parcel behind it where the landowner's got no access to it for forest management purposes. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Rich.
Got a few more provisions where we're making recommendations. So in number 14, effect on schools, public buildings, community facilities. Again, here, this lacks confirmation from the school district official on the extent of the impact of the proposed development. I've seen the emails that go back and forth between the county and the school district, and not all school districts, to your point, Jamie, in terms of acknowledging that they're aware that a subdivision's going in, and they verify that they've been notified. That's the extent in which there is communication back and forth. We think it needs to go further than that. Our recommendation is that the applicant has consulted with the local school district where the proposed subdivision will be located and received a written certificate of compliance from said school district stating that the district can or cannot accommodate the projected students at all grades generated by the proposed subdivision as to A, each and every phase of the proposed project, and B, the entirety of the project when completed. Again, I think it really comes down to the much larger topic of concurrency. And if you look at concurrency, and whether it's traffic, or it's police protection or fire protection, defined currency is the requirement that public services and facilities are available at the same time as the development they support. Now, in many jurisdictions, adequate public facility ordinances take care of that, right? And to a certain extent, Unified Code in Newcastle takes care of that. And to a limited degree, AFPO's in Kent take care of that. But what we're proposing here is that we take a very serious look at concurrency across all public facility needs, to including schools, obviously transportation as well. Moving on to number 15, again, this would fall under the same argument in terms of not just schools, but other public buildings, whether it be hospitals or otherwise. I'm sorry, Steve. Thank you. Number 15 is my favorite, and it is because we have endeavored on this for quite some time. By the way, do each of you have this presentation in front of you? Okay. So the way the county is proposing this, first and foremost, the word endeavor is defined as an attempt. And I think attempt in this case is a very weak verb, if you will. We think it lacks language regarding conditions that would require, again, concurrency. It would require transportation improvements or strategies to accommodate development impacts needed to make it concurrent with the land development. This is what we're recommending. The subdivision shall maintain a minimum Delaware Department of Transportation Level Service, LOS of D, on all adjacent roads and intersections within a to-be-determined mile radius. I don't think you can pick one and say it's going to apply to every situation. Secondly, an agreed-upon phasing schedule of the build-out shall be regulated based on the infrastructure improvements needed to achieve the required level of service of D or better. I'm going to refer to something in the appendix after I finish these two that gets back to the question that was raised regarding the memorandum of understanding between DLDOT and the county. Before I do that, let me go on to propose waterways. I think anything in 99C that does not refer to the adopted TMDL and PCS standards is a shortfall or a shortcoming. We think that the recommendation should read that the proposed subdivision will not adversely affect area waterways and that state-adopted total maximum daily load TMDL limits and pollution control strategies will be adhered to with best management practices. We think that language is important in 99.9C. And number 19, that's a big question mark. And based on what we heard for the last several hours, I think there has to be not just a proper way to address it language-wise in 99C, but I think there needs to be done, ordinance work that needs to be done. And in a number of these, I think it goes beyond just the right language in 99C. I think similar to the perimeter buffers, actual ordinance modifications were necessary. I kind of look at it, and since the holidays are coming up, that's kind of where my mind is, but I have the analogy of a gift box. You have a gift box, and you have a bow around it. I see the subdivision requirements in 99 and 115 as what's in the box. The bow around the box is 99.9C. And so what's important is not so much these 17 or 18 or 19 provisions as it is with what's in the box, what is in the ordinance. And so I think at times it's a little, excuse me, a little short-sighted to talk about the bow and not address what's in the box. In terms of my reference to level of service, the question came up what actually is in the MOU. So right now, you can see it up there. Read it to yourselves. You'll also recognize that the font in bullet point number two is red, and that's really important, and that's why it's red. Because where it's determined that level service of D is not always attainable, this statement says that this threshold may create an undue burden on a property owner looking to develop a property given the prior development that has occurred in an area contributing to the existing level of service. So essentially, if it's E or it's F, it's likely that that property owner is spared the burden. But what about the public? What considerations are there for the public? It has to bear that burden that this road is failing, this intersection is failing, but we're going to proceed with allowing additional vehicles on the road. So my point here is that the MOU needs to be reviewed, just like we're reviewing 99.9C, and take a look at what is necessary in terms of modifications to the MOU. And then secondly, and this had come up most recently with the North Star application, and that is in the Henlopen Transportation Improvement District Infrastructure Recoupment Agreement, there is a whereas that states the county shall set up a fund, which is the Henlopen TID fund, to help fund the planned transportation improvements in lieu of the developments preparing a traffic impact study and other phasing, in either phasing its project. Bottom line is that the TID and only the TID in Sussex County, because the TIDs in other jurisdictions don't have this language in it. If I'm sitting in your seats and I want to make the best informed decision about a development, and a TIS is going to help me make that decision, why would you not require that of a developer? Because it happens to be in the TID. And by the way, the TID traffic impact study as it relates to Henlopen was done back in 2014 and 2016. There have been updates to it, but essentially that's old data. So my recommendation, and then if you have to abide by the TID for an application that's within the TID footprint, then you cannot require phasing. So my recommendation is that along with the MOU, this also needs to be reviewed in terms of getting it up to date with what the current and future needs of the county are. I did, and Steve referenced, we have, the question came up in terms of what is the definition of a scenic view. We've researched other jurisdictions. We referenced visual impact assessment. There's a definition there. Historic features, natural features, historic byways. This isn't necessarily stuff we made up. We looked at other jurisdictions, and this is how they treat it. That's all for 99.9C. And I'm assuming we'll handle open space
next
separately.
Okay. Okay, who's next?
For the record, my name is Kenneth M. Yusuf. I'm a professional engineer. I'm a principal with the firm Morris and Ritchie Associates here in Georgetown, Delaware at 8 West Market Street. There are a couple different issues that I wanted to speak to. Again, I agree with the comments about the ambiguity and having measurable standards as a designer that designs large master plan communities, subdivisions of all different sizes, and commercial properties. A particular, based on my experience, I have background in training, professional training as a coastal engineer, dealing with floodplains, shoreline stabilization, shoreline protection, as well as residential and commercial land development in my career. One of the objectives of the proposed regulation is with regard to floodplains, and I think it's good to look at what you're trying to accomplish with the floodplain regulation. Any changes to the floodplain isn't necessarily a good thing, particularly with regard to climate resilience. One of the things with climate resilience is looking at potentially in areas that otherwise have appropriate zoning, utilities, and other things. You may want to increase the ground elevation by modifying, which is contrary to some of the other aspects of this, to provide for climate resilience and dealing with that particular issue. There's also the matter of whether you're dealing with a tidal floodplain where if you change the ground elevation, it really doesn't have any adverse impact on any downstream properties or whatever, might help floodproof and be a better, higher, better design. And then like a riverine system or a stream system where if you change the rate of discharge to that area, you may have downstream effects. So I think it's important to distinguish between the two conditions and take that into consideration. Related to that, with regard to the stormwater regulations related to minimization of runoff, promoting infiltration and those aspects, in a coastal area, in the state DENREC regulations actually recognize that the oldness of everybody holding their water back and releasing it over a longer period of time has created a lot of negative downstream effects to different properties based on the older design standards. The newer design standards recognize the benefit of the downstream, the areas that are closer to the tidal waters, releasing their water earlier. The channels and things are sized with adequate capacity to manage the overall runoff for the whole watershed. Sometimes it's better to let that water get out, focus your emphasis on water quality treatment to meet the TMDL requirements and everything on the site, which is appropriate in accordance with state regulations. But it's not always best to hold back and minimize runoff. So I think I encourage you to look at those objective standards very carefully. With regard to changes in groundwater level, again, promoting infiltration by its very nature does affect groundwater to some minimal extent. Again, having an objective standard on what that actually means, I think is very important to have something that a design professional, a developer, and a property owner can reasonably anticipate and work with. With regard to property values, I'm not a realtor, but that again is very subjective, and I'll leave it to other people to address that. Minimization of grade changes. Again, in a coastal area, in a floodplain, there's a requirement about moving soil on the site and minimizing moving soil, changing grades, and things like that. In a coastal floodplain area, you have an existing farm field or something, and someone wants to propose a reasonable development, it may be better to take the soil from the ponds and build it up. It's also oftentimes beneficial, I know on a lot of our communities that I believe are highly regarded, is to take the soil from the ponds and other things and put berming around. I've heard other people talk tonight about screening. Well, you're changing the grade on the site when you put berms in, landscaping to screen and planting trees as part of the quality site design that you're trying to bring to the county and encourage people to do. Requiring somebody to keep the existing grade that's out there today doesn't necessarily mean that objective and may not be the best design. With regard to some of the comments regarding DLDOT and TMDLs and stormwater, I think my recommendation is instead of having more than one agency or many duplicate agencies reviewing the same thing, having to have more staff, I think it's more efficient to leave the transportation issues with appropriate consultation input. Let them do it. Let DLDOT deal with the transportation issues. Let the Soil Conservation District deal with TMDL's water and those issues. Have those issues addressed in accordance with the regulations. If there needs to be a little bit tighter standard, you know, the council can consider that, but have the consultants comply with the regulations and leave it up to the experts in those areas instead of hiring a bunch of new people in the county to do duplicative things that other state agencies and regulations already cover, and I think other people have mentioned that. There is already a requirement on most of my large-scale projects on the part of DLDOT and even soil conservation to phase the improvements. I heard a lot of people talking about that. There are agreements that are done as part of the transportation design for off-site intersection improvements and road improvements that are all part of those agreements. I think, again, a lot of that, we don't want to add another layer and duplication of what other people are already doing. That's all I have tonight, unless you have questions.
We're good. Okay, who's next? Mr. Hutt, I think you're the last man standing. Or maybe Mr. Mumford, I don't know if he's going to speak or not. You're not? Good.
I think I already used up my quota of time for the evening, so I'm going to be very brief.
Thank you.
I guess what the summary of everything that I heard tonight from all the speakers who spoke was that, and I know that, you know, Mr. Robertson's probably going to chafe when I say this because he introduced this by saying there wasn't going to be a wholesale change to 99-9C, but everything I've heard says that that's what would be warranted, because if you're not going to do a wholesale change, you're mandating the nonspecific, and that puts everybody in the box that you heard people talking about. And you've heard, you know, there are specific things now. Things have been addressed. Resources have been addressed. And now there's a specific objective standard. And so 99-9C could say, comply with that. You know, perimeter buffers have been addressed. Now the applicants know what is the standard for that. We have a Open space is another issue, and that'll be the next ordinance that gets talked about. But then there will be a specific standard and that people have to objectively comply with. And one of the best examples I felt of mandating the nonspecific dealt with, it's section 14, the effect on schools, public buildings, and community facilities. And what's proposed is that the applicant has consulted with a local school district where the proposed subdivision will be located. As I heard it explained and during Mr. Robertson's introduction, it sounded like the applicant would need to demonstrate that it did something similar to what the county's planning and zoning office presently does, which is contact the school district and say, we received an application. Instead of received, the applicant would be saying, we're about to file this application for whatever the project is. But that satisfies the criteria. The word consulted, I'm sure that everybody in this room would have a different definition of what the word consulted means. And that's that non-specificity that is attempting to be mandated here. We saw the presentation from Mr. Barrasso regarding what they think that consultation should look like with some specificity versus what we heard even from Mr. Robertson. And that's what I think is concerning to me, is this non-specific. It's also why, as you know, typically or very often on ordinances like this, I often present line-by-line changes that I would suggest or ask the county to take into consideration. And I haven't done that here because there's so many of those types of topics that it would be difficult to address. You know, what's the right standard for forestry? We know who's going to do the assessment, but when they get done with that assessment, what does it mean? Again, we've heard tonight differing views even on what the results of that report should mean and how it should impact the outcome. I also feel obligated to say there should be no interconnect. I'm just kidding. I was.
That's I was wondering what we could throw your general direction.
All right. Anyone else like to speak?
That was great.
All right. All right. Commissioners, any comments, questions, thoughts you want to share? Mr. Robertson, any closing?
Closing comments?
You know, obviously, we've heard a lot of comments this evening.
Obviously, we've heard a lot of comments this evening about it. Again, I'll go back to where we started with. We had a list of 99 items. And or not 99, we had a list of 17 items in 99.9C. Sorry, it's getting a little late, but we're looking to not do a wholesale rewrite of that. That was the intention, you know, because we've already got this toolbox that we've had that's been in place for 30 some years, you know, that so the goal was to try to stick within those same terms. You know, for example, we did reference a resource and resource buffer specifically. You know, we heard this evening that you know, one of the things we could do would be to consolidate a couple of these and refer to the perimeter buffers. That probably makes sense. In full disclosure, this ordinance was drafted somewhat concurrently with the perimeter buffer work, so we didn't have that in effect at the time it was drafting. But, you know, those sorts of things are certainly good comments to take into account, along with, you know, the other ones as well. So,
okay. All right. All right. There being no further questions or comments, we'll close the public hearing. And our next public